afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you on this Memorial Day from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask you to hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us here on the line from the East, Dr. Paul Marshall. We're going to be talking about his book, Islam at the Crossroads, and we've had him on the program before talking about Christian persecution throughout the world, but this time we were going to talk about really of what's going on as far as the America's relationship with Islam and really how this whole incredible situation should be approached. Dr. Marshall, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thank you very much indeed for having me. It's good to be here again.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I've enjoyed reading your little book on the background of Islam, and of course, most people really get a little bit confused. We talk about the Muslim religion, and many Muslims are very nice people, and they're not militant, and yet, of course, we see this militant group seems to be dedicated to terrorism, seems to be intent upon attacking the icons of our society, the Twin Towers, and certainly our military facilities, and even our symbols of our government stability. So why don't you pick up this story? Where does this all come from? Why have we lived in peace for so many years with the Muslims, at least, you know, in this last 50 years or more, and then suddenly why everything begins to flare up, and of course we find ourselves really in a war, American troops stationed now in the Middle East, and I don't know how long they're going to be there, and then talks about conflicts with some of the other Iranian nations. So what's really going on?
Okay, let me say first what's not going on, because so often when I'm hearing or reading or watching stuff about terrorists by extremist Muslims, people say, oh, it's to do with poverty. It's not. All these leading terrorists are from upper-class backgrounds. They're very wealthy. Osama bin Laden is a multimillionaire. People say it's to do with ignorance. It's not. Most of these people are highly educated. Very many of their major leaders have doctorates from America. They're not ignorant of us. They know us very well. They know us better than we know them. Nor is it really to do with American foreign policy, to do with Israel and the Palestinians. Al-Qaeda was planning and carrying on attacks in against American interests, against the West, against Christians, even while things look good for peace in the Middle East. So those factors aren't really a major part. And if you read most of the terrorist statements, that's not what they talk about. As we know, Osama bin Laden talked about having infidel non-Muslim troops in Saudi Arabia. He complains about what goes on in fights against the Indians in Kashmir, against the Russians in Chechnya. So many of the reasons people point to are not the real ones.
Right, before we go on to that, we're going to have to take a quick break here, because we're going to have to bring some of the other stations online with us.
Okay.
So we'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest today, Dr. Paul Marshall. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Memorial Day, and let me just start out by reminding you that this is the day we celebrate the men who've given their lives in defense of this country in years past, and I thought maybe we'd start quickly with one of my favorite poems. It used to be read every Memorial Day, but seldom today. In Flanders Field, the poppies blow, but between the crosses, row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky, the lark still bravely singing flies, scarce heard amidst the guns below. We are the dead. Scarce days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, and now we lie in Flanders field. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw. The torch be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. And that was written by an orthopedic surgeon back in where he died in France in 1918. It was written about the First World War, the war fought to end all wars, the war fought to make the world safe for democracy. And now we find ourselves involved in another war, world war. Many people refer to the fact we're in the Third World War today. And with us today to discuss his book, Islam at the Crossroads, is Dr. Paul Marshall. He's written this book with several other people, but it's a very important, a little book, a very simple, but a very, very profound in what it has to say, because it goes into the background of why we're at war with Islam. And Islam is at war with us. You were beginning to say when we spoke before all the reasons we're not at war, why the Islamists, the radical members of the Islamic faith, are not at war with us. And you said that really it's not because necessarily of Palestine. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it would. It's not because they're poor. It's not because they're ignorant. It's not really about the Palestinians. We're dealing with wealthy, highly educated, very fanatically committed people, and we need to take what they say seriously. Here we need to look at history, and particularly the way they view history. And you know, often we in America don't take that history that seriously. You know, for its first 1,000 years, Islam was highly successful. It was more powerful than what we now call the West. It was richer, politically stronger, militarily more powerful, culturally more powerful, had bigger buildings, had better literature than the West.
We're going to have to bring on one more station, and we'll be right back here with our special guest for today, Dr. Paul Marshall. Okay, Dr. Stan back here. And so we're talking with Dr. Marshall about really the first 1,000 years of the Muslim religion, where really the Muslims had a very far advanced society. And as he was pointing out, in many ways, they were parallel the advance of the West in many respects. Their buildings were certainly more advanced. Their literature was extremely advanced. They were very, very powerful and very, very successful civilization. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, it would. They ruled the world from Spain right through the Philippines and everything in between. And Muhammad told Muslims they would be successful. They expected to be successful. The idea of, you know, continual suffering, of accepting a second-class status, that's not a strong theme in Islam. They expected to win. And for 1,000 years, that turned out to be true. I mean, as a Muslim, you'd say, well, obviously it's the true religion. You know, we're in charge, we're powerful. So there's that. And then in the last 300 years, everything has changed. The West, the Christian world, has expanded, become rich, powerful in every single way imaginable. The Muslim world has by and large collapsed. Some places are doing well, but it's an area of the world which is poor, it's run by dictators, it's not producing scientists, it's not producing literature. And so the huge question, which is in the heart of almost every Muslim, is, to quote the title of Bernard Lewis's book, what went wrong? Why were we successful for 1,000 years, and now why in the last few 100 years are we marginal? And the extremists, the terrorists, give an answer to this question. They say, the reason we have failed is that we have become bad Muslims. We have not followed the faith as it ought to be followed, and what we need to do is get back to what they think was the original type of Islam in the 7th century. So they want to do that, and they will kill any non-Muslims, and they will kill any Muslims who stand in their way. And what they want to do is reinstate what they regard as a pure form of Islam throughout the Muslim world. Where do we come in? Where does America come in? They believe that we're the people who are stopping them doing that. When they tried to overthrow the government of Egypt, we helped Egypt. When they did that in Algeria, we helped Algeria. When they're fighting in the Philippines, we have given aid to the government in the Philippines. So Osama bin Laden, in his famous judgment, his famous fatwa of 1998, said, the Americans are standing in the way of us taking over the Muslim world. But they're weak, they're paper tigers. If we hit them, then they will retreat and they'll go away. They've done it before. When we hit them in Somalia, they ran away. When we hit them in Beirut, they ran away. So the point of this terrorism is to try and stop America and any other Western country, or indeed any country, from interfering with these extremist attempts to take over the Muslim world. That's what's happening.
Well,
they
now,
want us to back out.
Well, now, but of course, what percentage of the Muslims really are in favor of this? Is this a 50% or 20% or 5%? Or is this the majority of Muslims really want to go along with this? Certainly, they would have won the election in Algeria if it had been a fair election. They'd probably be able to take over Egypt if it was a fair election. They did basically take over at least a parliament in Turkey recently.
Yep. We've got to break this into two levels. Well, firstly, Stan, is, you know, the answer to the question is nobody knows. We can't really do surveys to find out. So we're having educated guesses. But as a guess, I would say, firstly, I'm not going to talk about terrorism or violence. The percentage of Muslims who would want to return to the type of Islam that Osama bin Laden, that people like the Saudis, that people like the Taliban wanted. The number of people who would advocate that type of Islam in the Muslim world is perhaps 10-15%. Now, that doesn't mean they'll have violence to do it. I've spoken to lots of Muslims who say, yeah, that's the type of society we want. And then they want to achieve that by education, by persuading people and think they can move that way. Then you have people who are willing to engage in violence in order to do that. And here we're dealing with probably the order of 1 or 2%. That's a low percentage, but again, that means millions of people.
And of course, if you have 1 or 2% of the people who are willing to die in pursuit of a goal, they can certainly create real problems, especially in our society or in any other society.
Yeah, they can. Just one note, these are people not necessarily willing to die. I'm thinking of the 1 or 2% as people willing to fight.
All right.
People who would actually, well, they may be willing to be killed in battle. Most of them probably not willing to be suicide bombers or people like that. But, yeah, certainly we're dealing with tens of millions of people who want that type of society. We're dealing probably with millions of people who are willing to physically fight for it.
Well, what percentage do you think of the Muslims in the United States would be sympathetic with this? I remember on CBS seeing them interview, I think there were four girls from a Muslim school somewhere in the East, and you know they seemed to be all in favor of suicide bombers as far as Palestine. In fact, one of the young ladies said, you know, if I were to go into a Navy base and blow myself up, I would immediately go to paradise. And then somebody suggested she shouldn't have said that on CBS, and she said, well, I was talking about going into a Navy base at in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she wasn't talking about a naval base in Israel. She was talking about a naval base right here, if it were necessary. And there seems to be this fanaticism among some of the young people here. You would think that they would embrace our culture rather than theirs.
Yeah, most of them do. I mean, I think the sort of percentages I mentioned earlier are probably similar in the U.S. as well. And they, you know, the people who might be prone to violence, they're usually young males. You know, it's like gangs. One problem we have in sort of understanding or seeing Islam or Muslims in America is that often the people we see who are most outspoken, the people who are appearing on television, people who put out magazines, the people who control many of the mosques, tend to be the more radical groups. The leadership, or at least the public leadership, or the self-proclaimed leadership, tends to be far more radical than the average Muslim. Most Muslim, I think the largest single Muslim community in America is probably Iranians. And they tend to be very pro-American. They are very much against the theocracy in Iran. They fled to get away from it. And often we don't hear very much from them. That's because they're not complaining. You know, they're sort of basically hardworking American citizens, so there's no need to put them on the TV or on the radio. Other groups, maybe the second largest group is from India. You know, India has 150 million Muslims, something of that kind. So that many of the larger Muslim communities, we don't notice or we don't think about it simply because they're not making a noise. They're going about their business. But there is a tendency, particularly in the media, that the more radical spokespeople, particularly people of Arabic background, tend to get most of the attention. And they do, because they're well-organized and they're well-funded, often from Saudi Arabia, they tend to have a lot of control in Muslim media and in the mosques. So we tend to have a public leadership far more radical than the average Muslim.
Well, I certainly agree with that. One of the things that really bothers me, you know, is the situation as far as Saudi Arabia funding this radical form of Islam, not only throughout the world, but right here in America, and funding many of the radical clerics here who are, you know, calling for jihad. Here in the United States, how can we allow Saudi Arabia to finance something that is that subversive to the survival of our society?
Well, we are allowing it, and we should find every means to stop that, because the Saudis, they've got a lot of money from oil, and the whole country tends to function like a sort of radical Islamic version of the American Bible Society. That is, they are producing videotapes, audio tapes, books, magazines, newspapers, funding the building of mosques, of schools, of education centers, and so on. And they're pouring an awful lot of money into this country and lots of other countries as well. And that money is conditional on the people who have it, the books which are produced, reflect the Saudi Arabians' version of Islam. And we can call that by a variety of names. The most common name now is Wahhabism. And this is an extreme, probably the most extreme variation of Islam. And they are pushing it very much. You know, one reason I mentioned before that much of the leadership in schools and campus organizations and mosques is more radical than the average Muslim is because it's not only this, but a major reason is because the Saudis are funding it. And they are funding the most extreme version of Islam. And Muslims who don't want to go along with them, they're just squeezed out. They don't get to be the imam in the mosque. They don't get to be a teacher or a principal in a school. And this is a major problem, and we need to pay far more attention to it than we have already.
I agree with you totally, but, I know, for instance, that many of the families of the victims of what happened on 9/11, about 600 of those families are trying to sue the Saudi princes who were financing al-Qaeda both before and after 9/11. And they're being blocked by the current administration, which is very disturbing.
It is, but already they have a provisional judgment by a court that there is Saudi involvement, enough at least to go ahead with the trial.
Well, let's hope and pray that it will come out and that something can be done and that our leaders will have the courage. And we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Paul Marshall. We're going to be talking about his latest book, Islam at the Crossroads. And it is vitally important that we understand what the issues are, because we are, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, in World War III, in my opinion. Our forces are now more or less permanently in the Middle East, and of course there are going to be some very real problems there very shortly. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamets. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alimax isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alimax at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention, in times like this, something you might want to very seriously consider getting would be a big Berkey water filter. And, of course, if you live in an area you don't like the taste of the water, if you have other things in the water, many areas of the country have water fluoridation, and, of course, you'd like to get that fluoride out of the water because you're concerned about the health aspects of it. You've done your homework, and you haven't believed everything you've been told. And, of course, if you believe that fluoride is beneficial, go up on the Internet and start looking up some of the websites that deal with water fluoridation. I actually tracked down a professor up in Canada at a dental school there, and when he had the courage to come out and say, after supporting water fluoridation for many years, that he suddenly realized it was terribly toxic and harming people, and he was wrong, why he was threatened with the loss of his job, and, of course, being just simply driven out of dentistry. And I talked to him. He said it's not worth crusading. He said, of course, you can go up on the Internet and see what I've written, but I can't come on your program. This is what we're up against. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in getting a big Berkey water filter, ordinarily these are $270. They're available for $239 through Radio Liberty, plus shipping. And if you get it through us, you'll get a four-tape set or a video that we produce. So if you'd like to get a big Berkey water filter, a convenient means of filtering water in your home, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But the big Berkey water filters are not available in either California or Iowa. However, there is a portable water filter. It's called a Black Berkey. It's perfectly clear. It's filter is exactly the same. You put the water in the top, comes out the bottom, has a much more effective type of filter. They call the Black Berkey filters. On the other hand, of course, they have to be changed every 2 to 4 years, whereas the other filters and the Big Berkey don't have to. But this is clear, and of course, we have one of the Berkey lights ourselves. We think it's a great product. If you'd like to learn more about it, go to our website or call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And let me also mention that the price on those is $199 plus shipping. And then, of course, you get a free video or free four-tape set if you order a Berkey Light water filter through Radio Liberty. So, and, of course, you can filter pond water, river water. You can filter anything through there, and it's changed the taste. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like to know more about the Institute of the Constitution that will help you to teach others about the history of America, about the Christian foundations of our nation, the difference between a republic and a democracy, and why we're losing our freedom. Actually, 12 lectures by Dr. Eidsmo, all on videotape, and you can teach your neighbors and learn yourself. Why don't you call the Institute at 410-760-6759. That's 410-760-6759, and set up an institute yourself. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest is Paul Marshall. We're talking about Islam, and we were talking about, of course, the fact that the Saudis are actually financing the radical Islamic movement throughout the world and right here in the United States. So, and then, of course, many of the Muslims just feel that the West is responsible for the fact that the Arab countries, which once had a great and noble civilization, really have become more or less, in many cases, a second-class societies, and sorely impoverished. And of course, the great accomplishments of the first century of the Muslim religion have sort of fallen by the wayside. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
All right.
And not only fair, but very good.
Well, of course, I learned from you and, of course, from reading your book. But then, of course, what is the solution to this problem? It's very easy for the Muslims and especially the radical Muslims to point at the West and say, well, it's their fault. And so we've got to attack them and get them to pull out of our countries. But if we pull out of their countries, would that really solve the problem for them?
No, it wouldn't. A few things. One is if we pulled out and the either through terrorist activity or violence or even through peaceful means, if you have this very extreme version of Islam, the Taliban, the sort of thing they have in Iran, the sort of things they have in Saudi Arabia, the sorts of things they used to have in Afghanistan, the country will sink into decrepitude. I mean, Iran has fallen apart. It's gone into poverty and desperation and violence in the 20-odd years since Khomeini took power. If you look at Saudi Arabia right now, it's relatively wealthy because it has oil, but it produces almost nothing else, and its population is growing. So Saudi Arabia's income right now, per capita, per person, is one-third of what it was 20 years ago. It is sinking as well. And so the image these extremists have of, you know, a pure Islamic society, the examples we have are countries which are what we call failed states. They're falling apart. They're run by authoritarian governments. So what we'd be doing is standing aside while we're getting extremist governments in the end taking over a variety of states. And in the end, they, you know, will be involved in conflict with them again. So standing aside is not an option. It is precisely what they want. That's their definition of victory. Their view is Americans are cowards, Americans are weak. If you hit them very hard, they will back off and they will go home and we can take over. And the response to that is, at least part of the response is one of the things we've done in Afghanistan and in Iraq. We've shown we're not weak. If you hit us, we will hit back, and we will hit back much harder than you can. And this, I think, will have the effect of undercutting a lot of their support. The idea that success in Afghanistan and Iraq will produce, you know, thousands more terrorists and bin Ladens, I think is precisely wrong. An image of American weakness or Western weakness, that's what people, you know, that's what people will draw people to bin Laden. But when people, Muslims begin to realize, you know, if you line up with the extremists, you end up dead or in prison, that's a good way to stop people lining up. To quote bin Laden himself, he's an evil man, but he's not a stupid man. He said, when people see a strong horse and a weak horse, they go with the strong horse. And he's exactly right. And we need to be that strong horse to know that opposing us is futile. And in the longer term, that will undercut the strength of these movements because they're not going to work. It doesn't mean there won't be terrorists. It doesn't mean they'll no longer be killing us. I think that will continue, though at a smaller level. But it makes it much less likely that there will be this sort of worldwide upsurge of radical Islamic groups who are willing to attack us.
Well, let's go to Richard, who's calling from Alabama. Hi, Richard. Do you have a quick question or comment? We may have to take it after the break, but why don't you get it in what you wanted to ask?
How much time do I have?
Well, you got about 50 seconds. Would you rather wait till after the break?
Well, I'll just wait till after.
All right, fine. We'll just leave you right there then. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be back to you just as soon as we get back. And that's Richard calling here from Alabama, and we'll be talking to him as soon as we get back. Our guest today is Paul Marshall. His book, Islam at the Crossroads, and a lot of very, very good information in this little book. And, of course, it's put out by Baker Books, and we'll tell you how to get that as soon as we get back here after this break here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I just wanted to talk to you at this moment about a couple of the items we have. One of them, of course, is the Miracle 2 soap products. And Miracle 2 soap products, there's a soap and a neutralizing substance. There's a moisturizing soap, a lotion, and certainly a gel. And these products, we can't make any claims about them. We will tell you, though, that an awful lot of people who use them really feel that they've had miraculous results with them, and they tell us all sorts of wonderful things that have happened. And all we can do is suggest, if you'd like to try them, give them a try and see if they will help you. Certainly the neutralizer seems to help some people who have heartburn. But if you'd like to get information on them, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for information on Miracle 2 soap products. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and then I want, of course, to mention that we actually carry the Phenopoly games, and we hope many of you out there in the listening audience will seriously want to consider getting a Phenopoly set. Now, Phenopoly is a very convenient means of teaching children and grandchildren and even adults how to read phonetically and spell phonetically, pronounce words phonetically. I've had people 50 and 60 years old who've gotten these programs for themselves. And basically, in about 16 hours, you can begin to reprogram your mind so you can read phonetically, you can pronounce words, but mostly you can spell phonetically. And there are really only 40 sounds in the English language, 12 basic rules. When you know those, why, they'll really transform your whole outlook on the world. So if you'd like to find out about getting a Phenopoly set, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. And then Dr. Stan here, and let me just mention, if you have not yet seen my video of the war in Iraq, we hope that many of you will want to get a copy, and of course we'll be glad to. You can either get it by itself, or you can get it with a syllabus that we put together that has all the documentation on the sources of information, so you'll know where we got the various information. If you'd like to get the video of the war in Iraq, which is really a summary of all the wars of this past century, that would be, of course, starting with the Boer War, the Spanish-American War, which, although not American, they certainly had a profound impact on where we are today in the First World War. If you'd like to go ahead and get that, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's the war in Iraq, the untold story. Or, of course, our special syllabus goes along with it by the same name. But call right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Paul Marshall. And with us from Alabama is Richard. Richard, you had a question. Why don't you go ahead?
Oh, yes. Mr. Marshall, it really grieves me, and it just chokes me up, that we're continuing to bash Arabs. We don't have even a scintilla of evidence that any Arabs with box cutters were on any of those airplanes.
Well, I think most people would accept that.
And we do know that many of these Arabs were distraction agents hired by our own government.
No, wait a minute. You can't make that statement. You can't really prove that at all.
Oh, yes, we can.
Well, okay, fine. Well, I don't want to argue with that, but that's really taking us off the subject, which, if you
but
like, call me some
stop.
Other time. But we don't want to get off on, we're talking about the Arab situation, and I don't really want to get off into, the background of the 9/11 attack. There's certainly no question that certainly this was an attack on our country, but the background of that is not appropriate for this specific discussion. So let's go ahead and address what the issue as far as the relationship of our country to the other country. Dr. Marshall?
Yeah, there's firstly, we've been talking about Saudi Arabia. We need to pressure the Saudi government to stop funding, and if necessary, by means of our own laws within the United States, to cut off funding from the Saudi government to extreme groups promoting the extreme version of Islam inside America. That's one dimension. We also, because the Saudis are doing this right throughout the world. They're pushing their views, their version of Islam. They're doing that in Nigeria. They're doing that in Pakistan. They're doing it in the Philippines. They're doing it in Indonesia. They're doing it all over. They're doing it in Europe, too. And we need to work with these other countries to cut off these flows. That's a factor in violence in many parts of the world. A third thing we need to do is work with Muslim countries which are allies of ours and which are supportive. We have the governor of Pakistan right now. It's often not popular with this is President Musharraf, who has been a pretty good ally in his last few years. There are also places like Malaysia or Indonesia. And these are governments which are Muslim countries, but they're being threatened by radical Islam, and they need support from us. You know, one problem in Pakistan is that an awful lot of Pakistani kids, they don't have access to public schools. They don't have access to decent schools. So that many of them end up going to Islamic schools, which are funded by the Saudis and others, where they are indoctrinated in a very extreme form of Islam. And also, they don't learn any skills. You know, when they leave those schools, they've been taught a radical version of Islam. They've been taught to engage in holy war. That's all they can do. They don't know how to run a business. They don't know how to build a wall. They don't know anything about working with computers. So these educational systems are breeding grounds. And it's important for us to help a government like Pakistan, you know, set up an alternative schooling system. It spends very little on schooling. So building alternatives within the Muslim world to extremism, to helping moderate Muslims who want to work with us, this also is an extremely important dimension of what we need to do. And there are a variety of governments around the world who are very supportive of us in this.
Well, I certainly share that. But, you know, some of our incredible policies prior to the attack on the September 11th, certainly during the Afghan war, we were bringing in Muslims throughout the world and pushing this radical form of Islam. This is why you should be fighting the infidels. I know there was articles in the Washington Post about how USAID had spent something like $56 million on textbooks for Afghan children, indoctrinating them in this radical form of Islam. It seems that some of our policies were rather misguided in this period before September 11th. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Yeah, it is. They're very misguided. One reason is that a lot of people in our government, this is true in the media and the universities and elsewhere, really don't take religion and the fact that people believe things about God, about the nature of human life, and these affect and shape their lives. That hasn't been taken seriously amongst many of our elites for a long time. So that whenever someone had a religious position, they think, they're using words about religion, but they're really worried about oil, or they're really worried about land, or they're really worried about something else. Whenever people mention religion, there's a tendency to pretend they really mean something else. And so we didn't take these things seriously. So with these textbooks, it's just a response which says, well, those people in Afghanistan, so they sort of believed it. This is what they do. It's probably not important. So you print off the textbooks and that you send them out. And we still don't take these things as seriously as we should. You know, one in the past we would print these textbooks, and despite a hugely successful military campaign in Iraq, I think it's true that we have not been well prepared for what happened afterwards. And I wrote an article before that war even started, which pointed out the dangers of theocratic movements within Iraqi Shiism. And I didn't find anybody talking about it 2-3 months ago, and suddenly it's right on our plate. Well, why is this a surprise to us? All we have to do with this is sit down and read what people say. It's not like people like Osama bin Laden or the Iranians. They're not shy about it. They don't hide what they're doing. They put it on web pages. They put out videotapes. They put out books and say exactly what they believe and what they want to do. And we tend to ignore it. And then we get surprised. So in terms of addressing what happens in the future of Iraq, or even now in Afghanistan, where there are major problems, and let me just say, also the question of radical Islam amongst the Palestinians, these are very important things which we tend not to take seriously until they come up and bite us, and then we say, look at that. There's this huge push for a radical Islamic state. We didn't expect that. Well, we should be expecting that. Let me just mention something that almost nobody's talking about because of other events. But with the Palestinians, we're talking about the appointment, we're talking about the roadmap, we're talking about the appointment of a new prime minister. These are important things. But the new draft Palestinian constitution says that the Palestinian areas will be an Islamic state, that Islamic law will be the major source of legislation, and it says it will respect other monotheistic religions, presumably Christianity and Judaism, but that would imply they're probably not going to respect other religions. Now, we could argue about what all of this means, but to my knowledge, people in the State Department, elsewhere in the U.S. government, are not taking these tendencies seriously. And it's vitally important. If there's a push towards a Palestinian state, what happens if that Palestinian state is a radical Islamic one? What will that mean for the future of the area? So we're still not taking people in government, people in media, people shaping our policies in these areas, are still not taking these things seriously. We still believe that when people talk about religion, they really mean something else. And we've got to get over that.
Well, I've really been so disturbed, and I share your concern about this Shia movement within Iraq, because, 60-65% of the population there, is a Shia Muslim, and many of them do want an Islamic state. And if we have a one-man, one-vote election over there, they're going to end up with the theocracy. And, of course, that will, of course, deprive the Kurds and the Syrian Christians, and even the Sunni Muslims of any real opportunity for freedom. You cannot have a democracy in a country like Iraq, in a one-man, one-vote situation. If majority rules, why forget about any freedom for any of the people over there, including maybe many of the Shia Muslims who, may right now rally behind an Islamic state, but, all they have to do is look and see what's happened to Iran after 20 years.
Yeah, and we've got to take that seriously. Again, when we're talking about how many Muslims want a sort of radical Islamic state, even achieved peacefully, a minority. And I think that's true with Shiites in Iraq. We have the problem. We mentioned, that in America, most Muslims don't want that type of Islam. But they're not as well funded. They're not as well organized as the extremist groups. This is the case right now in Iraq. There's one group called Skiri. The people who want a society for Islamic revolution in Iraq. They're backed by the Iranians. They got lots of money. They got good organization. They're making a lot of noise. They're having demonstrations. There's this other guy named al-Sadr, who's sort of homegrown Iraqi, who is a radical. He has quite a few thugs around him. He's only, we're not sure how old he is. He's probably around 28. Now, both these guys have organization. They got money. They got clout. They can get street demonstrations out there. When the TV shows Shiites saying America out or we want an Islamic state, it's usually one of these or similar groups which do it. Now, in terms of actual prestige as Muslim teachers and leaders, they're pretty low. You have someone like a man named he's a Grand Ayatollah Sistani. He's probably the most respected Shiite teacher in the world. He's in Najaf in Iraq. He said almost nothing. He put out a fatwa, a judgment, while the war was on, telling Iraqis not to resist Americans. Since then, he's been fairly quiet. He's almost in hiding. partly because of fear that some of these radical groups will kill him, which they're quite capable of doing. So what you have is that the Shiite teachers of real prestige, the ones with real clout, who have the largest following, are being pretty quiet and maybe even pretty scared. They're not having influence. It's the radicals who have money and organization we're hearing from. So that also means that it's very important for America to establish good contacts with the Shiite leaders who are supportive of America, or if they're not supportive, at least they're not opposed, they're not going to fight against this. And many of these teachers have said, we don't want what they did in Iraq. He says, you know, we are religious teachers, we have no idea how to run a country, and we have no intention of trying it. We saw what they did in Iran, and it's a total mess. It's brought Islam into disrepute, and we don't want it. The most prestigious Shiite teachers in Iraq are saying something like what I just said, but we're not hearing from them, and I'm not sure the American people over there have yet made very good contacts with them. And this is very important. We must not let highly organized extremists drown out and intimidate the Muslim population at large.
Well, you know, it's really so interesting. You see these pictures of the demonstrations in Iraq, and they're marching around with these great big posters. Now, this is an Arabic country, and you would expect the posters would be in Arabic. Mm-hmm. No, they're in English.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're aimed at the American public. You know, Americans out, you know, hate America, etc. Yeah. Why are they writing in English, you know, if this... and obviously, everything is perception, and what they're trying to do is create a feeling of a discouragement on the part of the American people, not on the part of the Iraqi people. And then, of course, we've got this fellow Shalabi over there, and we, you know, he's got an armed guard, a couple of hundred people that we finance. Nobody seems to want him. He's the one we want in there. And I share with you, I think this is so poorly planned, you know, as far as what do we do when you win? You've got to have a plan how you're going to restore order and get the electricity going, and you know, so the people can have water and jobs and restore some sort of an infrastructure for society.
Yep, and you haven't won until you've achieved your goal. And our goal there is a sort of peaceful, decent Iraqi society. You know, that's the war goal. So the war isn't won until you've got, until you've achieved what it is you want. So we need to remember that. But you know, we are not well prepared in this, and that's something we need to work on. But the point you made about the demonstrations is a very good one and very true. You know, why are they holding up English signs? They probably don't know what's on them. Tied up with that is how many people were in these demonstrations, and what do they represent? You know. Some of them seem to have thousands. I said, well, there's 15 million Shiites. You know, one reporter said, well, there were 10,000 people out demonstrating, you know, against the Americans. I thought, well, we had 300,000 people in San Francisco demonstrating against, you know, America in Iraq. That tells me nothing. You know, all the demonstrations in America were against the war. Well, not all of them, but nearly all of them. Because if you supported the war, you didn't need to demonstrate. I mean, the government's doing what you think it should do, so you don't go out. The people who oppose it go out in the street and say, you know, this isn't what we want. And the same thing in Iraq. The people who demonstrated, the people who've got something to complain about. How many people they represent, I don't know. I'm not convinced that, you know, most of the Iraqis don't want us. I'm not convinced that most of the Shiites don't want us. These are sort of organized extremist groups who have a rent-a-crowd, and they bring them out. So, I mean, if we are wise and if we work hard in Iraq, I think we can establish a, you know, a half-decent democratic country there. But we need to approach the genuine, prestigious Shiite leaders, and we need to take religion seriously. Otherwise, we could lose this thing.
This is my fear, and I hope and pray you're right, and I hope they'll get some good counsel over there. How can people get copies of your book, Islam at the Crossroads?
It's, it should be at, it'll be in Christian bookstores. Baker's a Christian publisher. Though let me add, the book is, you know, written, doesn't assume the audience is Christian. It's for any person who wants a simple, clear introduction to what Muslims believe and Islamic history and things of that kind. So you can certainly find a Christian bookstore in sort of large general bookstores, Barnes & Noble, places like that. You could get it on the web from Amazon or another group like that. The publisher is Baker Books. They can, you know, they'll also provide you with copies. Also, if you want, you can get one from my office, and let me put in a plug here.
All right, go ahead. I guess your number out there.
I work for Freedom House, the Center for Religious Freedom. And if you go to the webpage, which is freedomhouse.org, and then the Center for Religious Freedom, send us an email from there to order a copy. So you can get us from us, but from bookstores around the country.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much for being with us. I really appreciate that.
Well, Stan, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention if you'd like to make any preparations, because I believe that we are going to have some very difficult times in America lying ahead. If you analyze what's taking place now, all the preparations that are being made by our government for a biological attack and the possibility of a nuclear attack, and then, of course, if you begin understanding that behind all the things that are going on, there is a spiritual war, and believe me, I believe that God is going to bring some difficult times to this country because America has abandoned him. So if you'd like to go ahead and make some preparations for the difficult times that do lie ahead, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for a ready reserve food catalog. We'll send it to you free of charge. You'll find a lot of things on there that you will want to have and you will want to have on hand for the times that lie ahead. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me mention a couple of the other things that I think are so vitally important. If you have never read our sustainable development syllabus, you really should read it. It'll take you into the background of this whole environmental movement and what their real agenda is. And of course, it has a copy of the World Bank water policy. Do you know that they plan to limit your access to water to 10 gallons a day? Well, you wouldn't even be able to flush your toilets and take a shower. You could do one or the other, but certainly not both of them. They have a truly diabolical plan. And then, of course, we have a summary of the World Global Biodiversity Assessment Report in there, and of course so much other information you won't get elsewhere. So if you'd like to get a copy of our Sustainable Development Syllabus, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can get our video, or you can get a four-tape set, but give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Then if you'd like to get a copy of our video, Iraq, the Untold Story, which, of course, is the story of all of the wars of the last century, fought in the name of, well, to make the world safer democracy, or the four freedoms, or how we were going to bring freedom to the world, or, well, you have to understand the slogans that are always used. But the slogans that are used, the reasons our young men go overseas to fight, are never the real reasons for the wars. And so my video, The War in Iraq, is must-seeing. And then, of course, you can get a syllabus with that. You can get it separately, or you can get the syllabus with the video. And, of course, it's a reduced price. And let me suggest to you that The War in Iraq, it's called Iraq, the Untold Story, or the syllabus by the same name. You need to get it, and then, of course, you need to get other people to watch it so they will understand what's truly going on today. Well, Dr. Stan back here on a Memorial Day, and of course when we stop and contemplate that our boys have gone overseas to fight, and of course many of them have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom today, and then we see that so many people don't value freedom anymore and are willing to go along with whatever they're told and relinquish their freedom in the name of security, oh, we've got to give up our freedom because there may be some terrorists out there. And yet, of course, if you go into the background, as we talked with Dr. Marshall, there wasn't an Islamic terrorist movement 20 years ago. And we talked about the textbooks that were published with your tax money encouraging the radical Islamic movement. And there's so many other things out there that really need to be covered. And, of course, the fact that we actually bought Muslims from all throughout the world to Afghanistan to fight in the Afghan war and indoctrinated them in radical Islam. Why would we do something like that? Well, I hope that you want to get our syllabus. I hope you want to get our 4-tape set and understand the overview of what's going on today. Again, if you'd like to get those, the number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. And then I hope that many of you will go to our website. That's radioliberty.com. We carry the Big Berkey products as well. And, of course, you buy either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light through Radio Liberty. Why we provide you with either a 4-tape set or a video that we produced of your choice from the list that we have. And again, that's radioliberty.com. If you go to our website, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished. You can, of course, go to our website and pull down our newsletters. And they're there. We give you our permission to copy them and help us to disseminate the information across America. And, of course, if you want to understand what really happened on the morning of September 11th last year, well, I pulled down our October 2002 newsletter. It's Christian Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and I think it, of course, will point you into a real understanding of what happened that morning. That's the October 2002 newsletter, Christian Breitweiser's testimony, which we've reproduced in total. And then, of course, we hope that you will tell others about our website, because that's how we are building up our Internet listening audience out across America. And, of course, again, it's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell other people about our radio programs and try to get them to begin listening on a regular basis. You have our permission to copy any of the programs that we do and, of course, to distribute those copies to others. What we want, of course, is you to get the information out. You have our permission to copy any of the videos that we ourselves have produced and get those in other people's hands. As we always say, if you're going to copy them, though, copy them right. So we give you copyright permission as long as you do a good job and help us to disseminate the truth about what's going on today, about the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And then lastly, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for our boys who are overseas. And believe me, it is a very dangerous place to be in Iraq today. I mean, I think many of the people there are very happy, but there are always those elements who are loyal to Saddam Hussein or the radical Islamic elements who hate America and everything we stand for. And then, of course, we ask you seriously to pray for our ministry, for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so if you agree with that, why, I hope that you'll keep us in your prayers and till tomorrow at the same time when we'll be back with you here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan saying goodbye. May the Lord be with you.